So I always tell people, if you can't create the cure for cancer, if you don't know exactly what you want to do, then just volunteer for an organization that does do what you want to do, whether it's children or education or environment or whatever you're passionate about. On your journey, you will find what that calling is to do your social impact.
Love Gangster with Adrian Boysell.
Hey, what's up, everybody? This is The Love Gangster, and I'm your host, Adrian Boysell. Today, we have a very special episode with a very close friend of mine, mentor, and a fellow social impact entrepreneur. He's a producer and volunteer. Without further ado, without saying too much, I want to go ahead and introduce him, Mr. Brian Gallinger.
What's up, brother? How you doing, man?
Very good. Good to see you. Good to have you here in the
studio.
Great
to be here. Yeah, it's awesome. I love what you got going.
It's been a lot of work, but it's all come full circle.
Yeah, that's great.
Thank you so much for being an inspiration and a mentor for me along the journey. We'll talk a little bit more about that, but I don't think any of this would have been possible without people like him. So why don't we jump into your story and have people get to know you a little bit?
Sure. Where do you want me to start? All the way in the beginning?
Yeah, exactly. That's going back pretty far, bro. You are originally from Washington, right?
Yep.
So let's just give them where you're from and a little about your professional career, kind of the beginning origins of your career, and then kind of we'll lead that up to where you are today.
Okay, sure. Yeah, so I grew up in a small town in Washington State, and then in my high school years moved to a bigger city, and that's when mentorship was really introduced to me. My first official impactful mentor is a gentleman named Greg Goss. He was our high school band instructor. And my parents were cool enough to let me choose the high school since they were moving in the middle of high school. So it was a really tough transition for a 16-year-old, like a small town. So I was kind of a big fish in a small town, comfortable, knew everybody, and went to a bigger city where I didn't know anyone. So my graduating class literally had more students than my entire high school. But I picked the school because their music program was in the top 2% of the nation. And I was very passionate about drums. And I knew that if I could get into a program, almost like an athlete picking, you know, a baseball school that had a good program, that I would excel in that area. And that's exactly what happened. But Mr. Goss, similar to the movie Whiplash, he was that first person that really kicked my butt and everyone's in our class, but pulling us to our potential. So like a great coach, he really did. And we're still really dear friends to this day. And that's kind of what shaped me. So from high school, literally my senior year in high school, I became an entrepreneur and started producing events and music. And that's when I fell in love with the entertainment industry, but simultaneously with business. I knew that I wanted to work for myself, but I didn't really understand what entrepreneurship was.
Yeah.
So I went to school and studied business, psychology, and sociology with no intentions or goals of getting a degree because I knew that I wanted to build my own companies. So I started off first in entertainment. I always tell people on my left hand, I was an entertainer. So I got to dabble in the modeling industry. I was a TV personality for a while. I tried acting, but I'm really terrible. And then of course the music. So I ended up touring for 25 years, different bands. And then on the right hand, kind of simultaneously, I became a producer and an entrepreneur sort of by accident because my band couldn't really get any gigs in the 90s in Seattle. It was the number one music scene in the world. That's so right. Who were we?
Yep.
Nobody.
Yep.
But if I threw a concert and put one decent name band on the bill, then my band could open.
That's right.
Because it's my concert.
Smart.
So that's kind of how I realized, okay, I'm pretty good at this.
Built your own stage.
Exactly, literally.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's phenomenal.
I got marketing. I got promotions. I got the business end of it. Mm-hmm. You know, studying it really helped too. So from there, I was a personal development junkie since high school. So my car was like a mobile learning vehicle.
That's
people
right.
would get in and it was either hard rock and metal, my band.
That's right.
Or Tony Robbins, John Maxwell, whoever had the latest CD out. And so I got into coaching and mentoring and, you know, to kind of pay it forward on the personal development. And then I just started to dabble in different areas of business to see where can I diversify, where can I develop different revenue streams. Music was hard to make money, you know.
Of course.
So, yeah, over the years, just continued with that. And I would dabble and bounce around. I've always since I was a kid, I always had multiple things going on, mm-hmm. so three or more.
Yeah.
So like when I was going to school growing up, it was a sport, mm-hmm. a hobby, school, at least three things.
Yeah.
And then that continued as an adult. I was a competitive jet skier from the high school years through college.
Pretty accomplished in the jet ski world though, right?
Yeah, at one point, number nine in the world. I think it was 1998.
Amazing.
Havasu World Finals. Freestyle.
Yeah.
So it was a much smaller category.
For sure.
But yeah, it was so much fun.
That's neat.
If the sun was out, I was on the water. Sweet. If it wasn't, I was on my kit.
It's a blast. So there's a couple things I wanted to pack, because I've always wondered this, and we've had so many hour, 2 hour long conversations over the years, especially during the pandemic. I mean, it was you and I don't think I talked to anybody as much as I talked to you during that time.
Yeah.
And there was one question I never asked, and now it's coming up again, is what was the draw for you as a kid? Like, how old were you, and what was the draw for you with music? Why music versus like art or just sports, or what was the draw for music? What did music do for you that really kind of created this whole movement of playing with bands and touring the world and doing all the things that you've done in the music world?
You know, I think it was multiple things. So when I grew up, I grew up in a really small town called Hoquiam, and it's on the west coast, right by the ocean. It's a logger community. You know, it's not a thriving community. It's very humble. But the good thing about the small town upbringing that I had is, first of all, I'm blessed with two of the best parents on the planet and brothers, and you know, our family is just unreal. Like, you literally could not have a better childhood.
Yeah.
And so I had that, but there wasn't a lot to do. There wasn't a lot of opportunity, and there weren't a lot of dreamers or go-getters mm-hmm. in our town.
Yeah.
So sometimes I felt like a fish out of a pond, and my dad adopted me at birth. So we don't have a lot in common. He's not my blood. Mm-hmm. Amazing father, and he taught me all the important things, and he led by example. But like, I'm one of two people in my entire family that did anything in entertainment. Mm. And I'm one of a handful, and I have a huge family,
yeah.
that is an entrepreneur. Mm. So I dreamed very young. I had my whole, you couldn't see the color of the paint in my room. It was covered in posters. you know, I didn't know what a vision board was, but yeah. like 6 years old,
yeah.
I was vision boarding.
Wow.
Where I wanted to go, and palm trees, you know, whatever. So getting back to the music was a way for me to achieve a lot of the things that I wanted to do and experience in life, mm. but also a lot of who I wanted to be. So I was very insecure. I'm still insecure. Even when I was an underwear model touring in bands, very insecure, shy. A lot of people wouldn't guess it because no. I can be outgoing.
Yeah, sometimes you say things to me like that, and I'm like, huh?
I know.
It doesn't compute.
I mask it real. That's why I was like, I'll be a great actor, because yeah. I'm always like yeah. faking it, like how insecure I am.
Yeah.
But with music, first of all, I think everybody loves music, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I love music. If I could have been a guitarist, I would have done that. If I could have sang, I would have done that. But I can't play guitar and I can't mm-hmm. sing. But there's something about the drums that connected with me very young. Mm-hmm. I think they're just cool.
They
and
are.
What I lacked growing up was cool. So from grade school, junior high, like middle school, high school, I wanted to be the boy that walked through school that guys wanted to hang out with, or they wanted to be like.
That's right.
And the girls wanted to date. Mm-hmm. That's what I fantasized about, but I wasn't. Mm. I was chubby, I had braces, I had glasses. I was very nice.
Yeah.
I was smart, yeah. I did well. I could play sports, but my brothers were like, they have awards all throughout our school. So
yeah.
And they have a different last name. So 10 years later, I go to high school and they're like, oh, little Brooksy, you gonna try out for football? And I'm like, yeah, no. I mean, you know, yeah. I'll try, but yeah. I'm not my brothers.
Yep.
But the drums, like when I would hear the drums in a marching band or anything in music, it fueled me. And so by learning to play the drums, I started, okay, I got some coolness factor.
Yeah.
And girls would notice me.
That's right.
Other friends would notice me, like, oh, Brian, you're good at that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what really started to launch my self-esteem.
Yeah.
And the coolness factor that I desperately wanted my whole life. So I think that was like an anchor for me.
Well, what's funny is I've never shared this before ever, and it just came to the surface for me. My wife knows, I've talked a little bit about it, but I was in band in middle school.
Ah.
And I was crazy in the drums. My dad was a huge Rush fan, right? So no nice. Better drummer than Neil Peart, right?
Like
as you've heard, yeah. right? Amazing. And then I started listening to Slipknot at a pretty young age as well.
Wow.
And so these drummers, Joey and just all these different drummers that I would listen to, out of all the instruments and all the musicians, that was always the thing that I was drawn to the most. And so I joined band, I think it was the sixth grade in middle school. It was drums. They put me on the trombone at first, and I was like, what the heck is this thing? This ain't gonna work for me. So I immediately went to the drums, and I went to those big, like, cow skin ones where you're like, boom,
oh,
boom.
Yeah, yeah.
It was in, like, the big band. So
yeah.
I did that all through middle school, and I just grew an affinity for the drums. And then I got a girlfriend my freshman year of high school, and she was into Blink-182. And if you're a drummer, right, you know Travis Barker, and he's
yeah.
just one of the most off-the-hook drummers out there, period. And I just fell in love with his music. He came out with that album a few years later. I think it was like 15 or 16, maybe, Boxcar Racer.
Mm-hmm.
I memorized every single song and the set he was playing on the drums. I don't think I could do it today, but I could play every single song on that Boxcar Racer album that Travis Barker played on the drums.
That's good.
I just, for hours and hours and hours. And the drums were just, there's just something about the beat and the rhythm and just the movement of the drums that I don't feel like other instruments have.
Yeah, it's different for everybody, but I read this book once, and the book said that music is a love language that everyone around the world universally connects to, unless you're deaf.
Hmm.
Then it went on to say that the one tool that every human has that they can connect to is their voice. So the reason most people like to sing and or want to do karaoke, even if they're not a good singer, is because when you hear vocals, you can hear it. You might not be able to play guitar or any instrument,
yeah.
but you have a voice.
That's right.
You might not sing well, but you can sing, right?
Exactly.
Unless you're deaf.
Mm.
Then it said that the most universal instrument of any instrument is the drums.
Wow.
Because around the world, drums in different cultures are different. But that beat and that rhythm.
You can feel it.
You put 22-year-olds, 20.
22-year-olds,
the
yeah.
number 20,
yeah.
You know, 2-year-old infants or 3-year-old infants in a room.
Yeah.
You can play a lot of different music, but if you play drums, a drum beat,
yeah.
they will all tap. They
wow.
all feel it.
That's powerful.
Because it's rhythm,
yeah.
right?
Yep.
And, you know, doesn't matter the ethnicity, the culture.
That's right.
You know, you could put Indian, African-American, like all these different
That's neat.
Kids in a room,
huh.
and they will want to try to tap and play, and it's huh. like this universal connection.
What a trip.
I have a fun story about Travis sometime, if you ever want. I don't know if today's the right
yeah,
time.
Yeah, but. Well, I definitely want to hear that for the future. We'll save that for maybe for the next episode. I want to take us somewhere that I feel, I'm just feeling like this kind of just little knowing feeling that I get. And we've had some of these deep conversations. I know you to be a very introspective person, and you helped me become even more introspective in some of the darkest times of my life, right? 2021, 2022, those were some challenging times personally,
yeah.
and I had to grow it, and I had to overcome some serious obstacles in my life, and those influences from you to my wife, that's where I feel like both of you have a lot in common, is that deep introspectiveness. What about the self-esteem, if you're okay with going here, what about your self-esteem from childhood all the way through? Where do you feel like that stemmed from? Was that from being adopted at birth and not having your father, your biological, like what? Where do you think that this lack of self-esteem and being self-conscious or whatever, where does that stem from for you?
I'm not a psychologist,
mm-hmm.
and I can't claim to know everything, but I've been around people my whole life.
Mm-hmm.
Hundreds of thousands of people a year between public speaking, bands, business, travel. And I sense that every human being deals with self-esteem issues. I think it's part of being a human.
I would say that's accurate.
Right? Where mine comes from, we can theorize, we can guess. I've been in therapy off and on for the last 4 years, and I have a dear friend named Z who's been incredible when we talk. She's a clinical therapist. She's retired now, but she would pull stuff out, even a lunch meeting that we would just get together or whatever. But I think some of it was passed down through the womb.
Mm.
My mom was pregnant with me, widowed. So her husband died tragically, and then she found out a month later she was pregnant. She had two young teenage boys. There was a whole ripple effect. It's one thing to lose your husband. I can't imagine. And, you know, they had a very healthy marriage. They're very happy. But there were so many things that loss also impacted other things. She was dealing with betrayal from his family.
Yeah.
Like, you know, cutting her out of the will kind of stuff. Single mom, you know, probably struggling massively financially.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And then one other thing that I, you know, to her well-being cannot share publicly,
yeah,
but one other traumatic incident that no human being should ever experience happened all in that time.
Wow.
So unlike most people, she never turned to drugs, she never turned to anger, she never turned to hate, she never turned to, you know, substance abuse, or she just turned inward also in an unhealthy way and just became super mom, workaholic to support herself, right?
That's right.
And so I think that stress that she was dealing with,
generational,
I think that had some impact. Now, not knowing my father, and not that had nothing to do with it, because I didn't know till I was a teenager that my father that raised me wasn't my natural father.
Gotcha.
So that had nothing to do with it. I had a flawless upbringing.
That's
can't
amazing.
Blame.
Yeah.
So it just comes from internal. Now, I do think that a lot of it came from my natural father, because I never met him.
Yeah.
And that's a whole nother episode.
Nature versus nature. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
I appreciate you going deep on that. I know that's a deep question, and it's a lot to ask. I know there's a lot of trust in that with you and I, so I appreciate us being able to even traverse down that path.
Yeah. 'Cause
it's something that, like, I think we all have that shadow self, right? Whether we want to admit it or not, we all have those parts of ourselves that we at one time may have felt shame about or guilt about or felt bad about, or maybe something's wrong with me, right? I've heard a lot of people say that throughout my life about themselves. And it comes to that point where you have to love that shadow self, accept that shadow self, and embrace that 5-year-old, 7-year-old, 8-year-old, 10-year-old kid inside of us, and love that person and say that, hey, they're okay, right? And I think there comes that point. And that insecurity, once that goes away, and once you're challenged like I was challenged in 2022, and you come over the other side of it and you're proud of yourself, it builds a whole nother level of confidence where, like, I'm sure I'm self-conscious now, like maybe my psoriasis from time to time, but very little phases me anymore. Like there's very little that even like puts a blip on my radar because of all that. It's like going through the challenges and the suffering, which is what it was, and coming out the other end and becoming the seeing the who the person I really am, not that shadow self, but seeing who God really created me to be, that's where things really started to break through.
Yeah, yeah.
And led to this whole show. I mean, ending up at Secret Knock and seeing and reconnecting with you again, I mean, it was amazing. So there was something that you said that I wanted to bring up that I think is really interesting about your personality is, you mentioned, right, you got your buddy here and the values that you learn about creating Grogu and Yoda and you being what your nickname is, right, the business Yoda. where does the Buddhist, and I know you met the Dalai Lama, you've done so many amazing things, where did faith and your relationship with God come into play in all of this?
Yeah, good question. So part of that fortunate upbringing is my parents raised us Christian. And I, you know, this is a whole nother podcast episode
right.
as well. That's a deep topic. But the short for me is organized religion is a man-made business. And so once people understand that and understand that human beings are flawed, then you understand that when a pastor or a pope or a priest or any person in leadership or power does something that is inhumane or flawed or toxic or
wrong.
Abusive,
yeah.
that, you know, that's that. That doesn't necessarily equate to the representation of that religion or that organization,
right?
Just because a Scientologist does something terrible doesn't mean that all Scientology is bad.
Right.
I'm not here to promote any religion, right?
Yep.
I was raised with great Christian values. Mm. So whether someone is Christian or Muslim or Buddhist or agnostic, or even atheist, none of that matters to me. If they have good values and treat people well, and if they lead an example that advances humanity, that's the magic sauce. That's right. What matters, right?
Which is love, right, ultimately.
Ultimately, yeah, just love, doing the right thing, having integrity, you know, supporting other people.
That's right.
We're all going to make mistakes,
yep.
You know? So, but I was raised with those Christian values, and I grew up in a good small church where we didn't have problems in our church. It was filled with love, and if you needed support, that was the community that you could go to.
Wow.
And my parents run Bible studies and participate heavily in their church to this day because, like my dad would say, you know, the way he was raised, he didn't have those values and teachings from his parents and his community. So it was Sunday and church, those lessons would remind him, sin less, be a better husband, be a better father.
Yeah.
Break your bad habits, develop good habits.
That's right.
Take your eyes off yourself, serve other people. Have faith in yourself. And he found that through the Lord and through the church and the Bible. So did my mom. So that was a great upbringing for us. But when I learned about George Lucas's background on Star Wars and specifically creating Yoda, I did a deep dive because I just thought, man, Yoda is my spirit animal. Mm-hmm. This guy is badass, he's so but he's good. Cute, he's funny, he's sweet.
Yep.
He really leads from the heart, but if you need him in a fight, you want him on your side.
Yeah.
And what a great mentor. Like, it's the best cinematic example of mentorship probably in cinema history.
For sure, I would agree.
So, yeah, I just loved Buddha and studied, I loved Yoda and studied the background, and part of how George created that character was studying Buddhism and other philosophies. So over time, I had told people, I consider myself an a la carte spiritualist. Because there, even though I was raised with the title of Christianity, there are so many things about Buddhism that I love and apply to my life.
Absolutely.
So I, you know, it's not like I'm a Buddhist Christian,
That's right.
you know?
Yeah.
And titles and labels, it's all, nonsense to me.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep.
Just being a good person, doing the right thing, that's what I was aiming for. So that's where the affinity grew in.
So do you run, whether it's business, personal life, you know, relationships, do you run it through the filter of your faith and kind of your relationship that you have, your personal relationship you have with God?
Yeah, so I've been also blessed, like my whole life, ever since I was a kid, people have just been inserted into my life. Protectors, mentors, friends. Mark Hercock was like an uncle figure to me growing up, but he's not family. He was just a friend in the community. But he was an early mentor, even before Mr. Goss. So I believe that God has been planting angels and specific people in my life to guide and support. Because if anything, we all have, what's it called? From law of familiarity, right? You've heard of that?
Oh, yeah.
So you could have the best parents in the world, like I did, but at some point in time in your relationship, because of the laws of familiarity, you get too close to a human that you don't hear them in the same way.
It's true.
So it's these coaches and teachers and outside mentors that will connect with a teenager in a different way. They could say the exact same thing that your parents have been saying for 4 years, but because it's your parents, you don't want to hear it.
That's exactly
You're
right.
You're too close.
All of their life experience, all their challenges and problems, everything they went through amounts to nothing. But if their friend comes over and starts telling you about it, you're like, and you're listening to every single word that comes out of their mouth.
And I'm sure my poor parents were like, I come home, you know, I spent the day with Mark and he said this and epiphany. And they're like, we've been telling you that for 4 years. Okay, son, you know.
Exactly.
And they never did. Like, they were just, you know, the best examples.
That's so funny.
Happy for you no matter what. But so I would try to, I would definitely say that because I've been blessed with those people, and I don't think that that's just universal luck, right? I was a kid, so I couldn't put enough karma out there to attract, you know, goodness.
For sure.
Over time, I hope I did some, but.
Exactly. Well, I think leading into, you know, where you and I connected in 2019, which was an interesting accumulation of a really, the core premise of the event was really great, but there were some fundamental flaws and issues, and you were kind of the glue that was holding that all together. And if tragedies hadn't happened and losses hadn't happened, I don't know if we would be sitting here today having this conversation, right? Our relationship developing was in part due to somebody else's passing and the loss of somebody. And it's just crazy to see how God has orchestrated good, bad, and otherwise, these incredibly elaborate architectural plans that we can't even wrap our minds around about how grand and beautiful they are. Because like I said, I couldn't imagine doing the last 4 years of my life and being where I am today without having your guidance, your leadership, your just having somebody to hold space for you and sit there and listen to me, right? And that has been incredibly powerful. And so where I wanted to go with this is about 6 months ago, we were still talking. We went about a year where we weren't talking quite as often there. We talked two or three times throughout the year. But during that time, I went to your Facebook page and I started just going through videos that you had posted. I don't even know it was Facebook. It may have been somewhere else. I think it was Facebook. I started going through videos you had been posting and just reminiscing almost like your life. And just because I have such an affinity for you. And at one point I encountered a video that you had made for your dad's 70th birthday.
Mm.
And it was your brothers and your family. And you did this heartfelt, sentimental scene. And you were out in front of some beautiful land. There was behind you was some crazy.
Mount Rainier.
I was like, that looks familiar. I've been there before.
Yeah.
This beautiful landscape. It was just such a well thought out video. And I wanted to use that as kind of the bridge because you're just such a heartfelt, genuine person, bringing things into kind of where you're at now as a social impact entrepreneur, the Be Great Show, the Dream Promoter, which we can talk a little bit about. But like, how did this whole music career and entrepreneurship and all that form into where you are today? Because I know you went through some personal health challenges and things, so maybe you could talk about that. That kind of led you to the social impact and being overseas and doing all this stuff. I kind of want to catch people up to kind of what led you to where you are today.
Sure. Yeah. So another great podcast topic would be silver linings. So I am a relentless silver linings chaser.
Mm-hmm.
And every time a human being goes through hardship, and you went through, one of the biggest that, anybody could go through. We all have our things and it's all relative. It's all subjective, right?
Right.
People have different pain thresholds and they react differently. Yeah. One little thing might totally set someone off. Another huge tragedy is just, a speed bump.
That's right.
So what I've learned now, I just turned 49 and it took me forever, is if I look back now, I can pinpoint every hardship or tragedy or trauma or, PTSD moment or whatever. And I really haven't had much. I've had a super blessed life. Mm. But because I've had such a blessed life, and I'm kind of a pansy, I'm very emotional, very sensitive. I am. Yeah. A lot of my friends make fun of me, and that's okay.
Yeah.
That's what gives me my heart. But it doesn't take much to create toxicity or trauma for me, because I am sensitive.
Yeah.
But every time that I had those chapters, in the moment, it was devastation, and it was hard. And I don't like that cliche saying of things happen for a reason, especially when people say it when you're going through it, because you just want to punch them in the nuts.
That's right.
Thanks for the great advice.
Yeah.
Yes, let's get in the ring.
Yes, exactly.
But once it passes and time does heal all wounds, then I could look back and say, okay, from that tragedy and that huge field of manure blossomed these beautiful flowers.
That's right.
Relationships, opportunities, experiences, businesses, whatever. And that happened last year.
Yeah.
I think we're going to go through stuff every year. That's just the cycle of life.
Yeah. You're either headed towards a storm, you're either in a storm, or you're coming out of one.
That's right.
Three phases of life.
Exactly. You better be a good swimmer.
You better be a good swimmer.
That's the bottom line.
That's right.
So yeah, what was the question?
How did you go from, entrepreneur, businessman, model to social impact guy? What kind of happened in between there?
I got sick. So, remember growing up, I was not that stud.
Mm-hmm.
So I hit the gym. I finally passed I remember when I was in elementary school, I was so nervous to take my shirt off in the summer because I was fat.
Yeah.
And my dad once, he said, you're going to grow out of this and then you're going to be skinny and you'll be insecure about being skinny.
Yeah.
And I did. Wow. I became a beanpole, and in high school I was scrawny. So then I was hitting the gym to beef up.
Yep.
I was a late bloomer. So college, that's when I primed.
Yep.
It all started clicking. I was drumming, touring, and with big bands. My band was never really that big. Yeah, so I was underwear, fitness model, touring in a band that opened up for some major bands.
Wow.
As a competitive professional jet skier, business was doing well as an entrepreneur, you know, coaching, mentoring, doing a lot of volunteer work. So in that 20 to 25 period, all cylinders were firing.
Yeah.
Things were rocking and rolling. My confidence was in, and I was hosting MTV, and just like
crazy.
So many different cool things were happening. But as all that happened, life humbled me. And I don't know if this was part of God's plan or just my plan, you know, my destiny or whatever, but I got very sick. Sick to the point to where I went from being that underwear model to the size that I am now.
Wow.
And it slowly happened over a little over 2 years. They can't pinpoint it exactly. And without going into all the details, it was serious.
Yeah.
And it was something very uncommon. So it wasn't cancer or things that people could relate to. But my confidence went back maybe even lower than what it was before, because then I knew what it was to be those things. I didn't have energy. I was cramping daily. I had mood swings. I was lethargic. I had so many symptoms that I wouldn't wish upon anyone.
Yeah.
And I really empathize with people that have chronic illness or you know, anything like that, even if it's back pain, because it affects everything.
It does.
So during that time, I had been very successful and I had earned a lot of accolades and experienced a lot of things. I had already fell in love with charity work and volunteering, and I had always dreamed of having my own nonprofit. I just didn't know what it was. So I always tell people, if you can't create the cure for cancer, if you don't know exactly what you want to do, then just volunteer for an organization that does do what you want to do.
That's right.
Whether it's children or education or environment or whatever you're passionate about. And then on your journey, you'll find what that calling is to do, you know, your social impact. So because I had less energy and the physical, the physicality to model or tour, I had to, my band was on our biggest tour and I had to stop. They had to hire another drummer. So I had to watch another drummer play with bands, you know, that my dream kind of fading away. Girlfriend at the time that I loved very much left me. Like it was a lot.
Dark time.
It was a dark time.
They call it dark night of the soul.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. But through that, I didn't have the clarity then, but I have the clarity now.
Yeah.
It was a defining moment over a probably 3 to 5 year period. A defining chapter for me that's when I made the switch from pursuing entertainment and business to using all the different skills, talents, and the resources that I had developed over those years and putting it all towards one thing. And that was humanitarianism or social impact. So that's when I was able to really take those different skills and experiences, the background.
Yeah.
I didn't need to look a certain way. I didn't have to have a specific skill other than, you know, producing events. And I didn't need this physicality skills that I had before, right? I didn't need to tour.
Yeah.
But I could still do stuff in music. I could still produce TV and events and movies and create solutions for social impact. That's how Be Great was born.
Okay.
It was one day sitting there thinking, how can I take all of these gifts and abilities and desires and put it into one thing that I could add positive impact on the world?
That's right.
And I think that's everybody's dream, to do what we just described,
I agree.
So now, fast forward, I still build startups, I still do consulting work, and I still pick up the sticks.
That's right.
I still play the drums every now and then.
We'll have to add a video clip to this, because I got a couple cool clips of you drumming.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, because it's still a passion, you know. Mm-hmm. Like once you're an artist, you have to have that outlet.
That's right.
It's travel, music, and you know, building relationships with people like you. That's what puts happiness into my life. That's Everybody's right. different.
Fills
right?
your love tank.
Totally.
So you lived in the Philippines for a short period of time, didn't you?
Yeah, I lived in Southeast Asia. I originally went over to do consulting work. Mm-hmm. And then while I was there, this was right after the 2008 crash.
Oh, wow.
So I lost a tremendous amount of money. This is another chapter where I was mm-hmm. battling depression and adversity wow. and healing. And so I went there for some work. And then I had never been to the Philippines. Mm-hmm. And while I was there, I realized it's back to the future there. Like literally.
Wow.
Because this was 2011 and they didn't have Kinko's, Chipotle, WeWork. They didn't have Yelp. Hmm. Like they didn't have all these businesses yeah. and solutions that were prominent That's around right. the first world mm-hmm. areas.
Yeah.
So I saw that as an opportunity to simply create clone businesses. And so, you know, creating those businesses, you could provide that solution in a third world country, and they're like, how did you think of this?
Exactly.
And I'm like, I literally didn't,
yeah.
but I'll take the credit. Like, hey, let's do it,
exactly.
you know, let's build a franchise.
Wow.
And so I went for a shorter time, but while I was there, I ended up staying because I fell in love with the bug for startups. Mm. And it was nice to have a community that appreciated it.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, coming from LA, where it's, you know, you do the top thing and people are like, eh, you know, that's cool.
Exactly.
Good job.
Yeah. Yeah,
we'll see you next week.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
Or the opposite, just narcissistic mm-hmm. rejection. And
totally.
So going over there, they were so grateful and thank you for providing jobs mm-hmm. and what a brilliant idea. And
wow.
you post one thing on Facebook, yeah. you have 200 Filipino friends, they all will like it.
Yeah, exactly.
Comment and share.
That's right. So did you meet Cindy over there?
Yeah. So the point I was leading to, and sorry I tell long stories.
That's okay.
I went to a Bible study with Anthony Pangilinan, and he's the OIC of a nonprofit there called Called to Rescue.
Oh, wow.
And he said, we were in Cristal Bello's house, and her family's like one of the most famous families. Rufa Gutierrez is one of the most famous celebrity actresses.
Wow.
All these people are in the room. It's like, I think there was two or three foreigners. You know, two Americans. And at the end, he said, well, I'm going to introduce a special guest. She came all the way from Washington State. She's the founder of this nonprofit. And then Cindy walks in.
Wow.
And I'm like, wow, from Washington. So she goes on to share this emotional journey of how they're rescuing children from sex trafficking and abuse and missing kids. And I'm like crying. Everybody's all emotional. And she says, hey, at the end, raise your hand if you're interested in getting involved, like participating, volunteering, whatever. Yeah. I'm like, yeah, I think everybody, 30-some people raised their hands. Went and talked to her afterwards. Her husband went to my rival high school.
Whoa.
They live like 2.5 hours from where I went to high school.
Trip.
And just all this small world mm-hmm. stuff. Fast forward to today, I'm not good with math, but almost 15 years I've been volunteering with them.
That's right.
No income. Yeah. No. I produced their first ever fundraiser. They didn't have marketing, they didn't have websites,
wow.
they didn't have videos, social media. We did annual toy drives for the their safe houses.
Mm-hmm.
So the kids, they're rescued, but they have nothing.
Wow.
They don't have clothes, they don't have living supplies. Of course, they don't get Christmas presents. So we would go raise all that stuff. And, you know, I just fell in love with it. And that was another defining moment where it was like, okay, there's a calling. I didn't create it.
That's right.
But been super passionate. And she's another one of those mentors.
That's
she's
right.
my spiritual mentor.
Yeah.
Like, God, just placing these people in my life.
Yeah, you with me with you. It's just pretty incredible. So now, I know you're still doing social impact. You have Be Great. I did the Disney event with you. I know you've done a couple other events. What are you currently working on? What is your current thing that you have on your plate that you're trying to tackle?
Yeah, so I still dabble in startups, but my main focus is on Be Great. So Be Great is a social impact production company, mm-hmm. and we have three divisions, but those three divisions are divided between a for-profit, and a nonprofit.
Okay.
So the end result comes together, right?
Beautiful.
For both.
That's right.
But how we do it is we produce events. The events raise awareness and resources for social causes and nonprofits.
Okay.
So it's been great. The Be Great Network, which is the name of our nonprofit, mm-hmm. our network has helped to raise over $55 million for other charities. We've never taken a commission, and that's just been beautiful.
Wow.
We vet and support nonprofits and even for-profits. You know, it can be a for-profit business that creates solutions for social impact.
Wow.
So that's been incredible. Our awards division honors, recognizes, and celebrates humanitarians, people that are moving the needle in social impact.
That's right.
And you're one of them, 2021,
2021
award recipient.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I just cleaned off my little Mickey Mouse character and stuck it in my case and at my house, in my new studio setup I have at my house. And it's one of the biggest, coolest defining, because I never thought, when I first got the award, I was like, I'm not worthy of this award. Like, what have I actually done to even deserve this award? And then I started thinking about, like, asking myself, like, more logically and getting out of my own way. And I was like, man, I've done a lot for years. I've built these communities. I've helped these people. I've done youth ministry. Like, this has been, my whole life has been dedicated to this. I just haven't ever taken any credit for it. And
yeah.
It was like finally somebody seeing me, and it kind of just created a whole spark that just lit a whole new fire underneath. It went from, you know, fire to a freaking bonfire.
Yeah. And that's why we awarded you. You know, Be Great isn't about focusing on just celebrities or billionaires that are doing social impact at this level, because it's all relative.
That's right.
You are at a level that is relatable to a lot of people around the world, and it's more relatable in some ways, because if you are a billionaire or a celebrity, that's not relatable to the masses.
That's right.
Right?
That's right.
And the fact is, you do a lot. Yep. And I knew that when you're the type of person that carrying that award and that trophy, you have so much integrity that it'll elevate you to do even more.
Oh yeah.
Right? You were already on that trajectory.
It did.
And that's the beauty of it. Yep. And that we get feedback from people that are, oh, that's so cool, because I can do what Adrian does, and I can use my skills as an artist or a video producer or social media, and there are ways that you can do positive things.
Yep.
So our third division is the media.
Okay.
And that's what really spawned all of this, because I was thinking, how can I produce different forms of multimedia? TV, events, movies, short films, video production, to raise awareness and to spotlight the greatness in humanity.
Wow.
Why is it that, you know, $100 million films are made? They're sci-fi, they're action, they're not a true story, they're not a social impact, they're not raising awareness on an important topic, they're highlighting a hero, true story, they're not not necessarily having an inspirational, relatable, you know, different studios have done a good job of including this stuff.
Yeah.
But these actors are getting paid so much.
It's far and few between.
Exactly, in the grand scheme of the numbers,
exactly.
Probably 2%.
You got Zac Efron, and like I can't really think of anybody else other than that one show that comes to the top.
Yeah,
of my head.
Down to Earth with Zac, that's been great. Mm-hmm. You know, I think Oprah was one of the first to leverage television to raise awareness on social issues and charities, and to raise money.
One.
And Ellen did, you know, during her time. There are definitely examples, but. Mm-hmm. Be Great, we have an international franchise TV show concept that's in development. We have 4 films just this year releasing, documentary films. We released multiple last year and the year to come. So every year we're creating content from 3-minute viral videos all the way to, we're working on a $50 million feature film right now. That I can't talk about too much, but it's going to be awesome.
That's amazing.
So that's our media division,
and
our goal is to make social impact sexy.
That's right.
You know?
That's right.
To have fun with it and
that's so good.
Become the Oscars of philanthropy.
So what does the future, you know, the next 20, 30, 40 years of your life, right? Because you're going to live to be 100 at least. What does the next 20, 30, 40 years look like? What is your dream? What is it you're going after? What do you have your eyes fixed on right now? Not just beyond Be Great, but what is the legacy and what is the thing that you're trying to build right now, big picture?
Yeah. So I've been a dreamer my whole life. Like I said, as a kid, I did things that I didn't know I was manifesting, but I wasn't. No one taught me how to make to-do lists or dream boards. And my mom made to-do lists, and so I witnessed and observed that. But no one sat down and said, this is the value, you know, this is the power hour, right?
The power hour. Yeah, what is the power hour, real quick?
When I was training and coaching with Tony Robbins, I was blessed to work on some programs. I built this ultimate day routine and came up with the power hour. So I, like you, work with a lot of artists my whole life.
Yeah.
So artists typically have a heavier creative side of the brain and less on the organization.
Facts.
ADHD, you know, all these things.
Yeah.
Now, once they tap into and understand and just stay in their lane, that's awesome. But as a business owner like you, and this is what we coached and mentored on, our commitment to each other was to help each other see our blind spots, develop better good habits, and break bad habits. That was our commitment to each other, and it still is.
That's right.
So I taught you the power hour because I felt that that was something that was holding you back.
For sure.
You were missing things and missing opportunities and not getting certain things done because of that.
It's true.
So it's the simplest thing, and everybody can do it in their own way. But what I do is I start my day. I have a full morning routine, but part of that routine is doing a power hour. So before I do a meeting, a call, interact with anybody on Zoom, or even open up that first task to work on, I do my hour of planning. And in that hour, I take my to-do list, I plan my day. Mm-hmm. And in that day, I categorize what things have to be done on a computer, what has to be done on a phone, what has to be done at a certain time.
Oh, wow.
What things require my car or being outside? What requires money? Because how many times do you go out, you go to the store, and you get home, and you're like, darn it, I needed to go to the bank.
Exactly.
But I was already out. I came back. Yeah. Now I got to drive out again.
Exactly.
And in L.A., you know, going 2 miles could be an hour, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So I got so, over time, so meticulous. Then I would start color coding things that I'm like, okay, I can do these three things while I'm on the Zoom call.
That's right.
I can multitask. Mm-hmm. If I'm not speaking.
Ultimate efficiency.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's the power hour. And then, you know, I plan the day, I plan the week. And then at the end of the day, I recap, what did I do on my today list, right?
Yeah.
And what didn't I do? Because that needs to move to tomorrow's to-do list.
That's right.
And that power hour, that combination increases efficiency so much.
Yeah.
You save so much time, money, and the people that you're working with, whether it's your employees, your volunteers, your partners, your clients, they feel your productivity, which enhances a respect. And the love just goes around.
That's right.
Because they're like, wow, you said you were going to do this today, and you did.
And you did it.
And then it elevates, like this is what happened with you and I. You're like, dang, Gallinger's, I want to up my game.
That's exactly right.
And then same thing with you. Like, I'm like, I like how AJ, okay, I want to.
That's right.
It's like it's a little challenge.
I like the challenge, yeah.
Yeah.
That's great.
It sharpens.
That's healthy. Well, that's helpful. Hopefully you guys are taking notes on the power hour. And you told me.
My Venmo at the end so people can. No, I'm just kidding.
Venmo. You said that you could break it up to like half an hour in the morning and a half an hour at night.
Whatever works for you.
Or an hour at night or an hour in the morning, whatever is going to fit your flow.
Like if, see, now again, I don't have a job.
Yeah.
I work from home or I work remote. Mm-hmm. So it's different for everyone. That power hour might need to be for a single parent. If they get up at 5 to go to their job, getting up at 4 might not be conducive.
Mm-mm.
Or maybe that hour they have, they need to feed their child or get them ready for school.
Mm-hmm.
So when their kid goes to bed, normally when everybody's flipping through TV or videos or, you know, however they check out at night, that might be the discipline where you have to go, okay,
That's right.
I don't watch TV at night. Yep. I don't get that blessing.
That's right.
I got to knock out my power hour.
I like that. And I would say, as far as just transparently for everybody, I am about 60% on top of it when it comes to my power. About 60% of the time on top of it. And I can always tell the weeks where I'm doing it, I'm on top of it, versus the weeks that I'm not. All over the place, writing things on envelopes and writing things on post-it notes. And just, I mean, trying to, like, where did I put that post-it note?
Yep.
I can always tell the difference between having it all written in my notebook versus having it in 1,000 different spots. Oh, I got to remember not to do that, you know, maybe not let that one thing slip through the cracks. So it's a really powerful tool.
But you hit on an important point. I'm not great with math, but let's analyze this just for a second, just statistically. You said 60%.
Yep.
Let's just say 50%
there
conservatively.
Yep.
Okay. What is 50% of $1,000?
$500.
Yep. So the average person in California is making probably 70 grand mm-hmm. per year. If you increase your income 50%, you just crossed over the six figures.
That's right.
So to put that in perspective, the growth I've seen with you because of this 60% or 50% power hour,
mm-hmm.
the impact that it's had in your marriage, as a parent, it's because when we miss things, we are hard on ourselves.
Big time.
So your attitude drops because you're frustrated with yourself.
That's right.
And your wife is frustrated because you forgot to do stuff.
That's right.
You said you would go pick this
trust
up and
is
you
broken.
Didn't.
Yeah, she doesn't feel safe. She doesn't feel like you could be the leader. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Like I'm totally.
You forget
there.
Something for your kid. She's frustrated.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it impacts everyone. So then when you go to work and Jordan or Chris or whoever is like, why is Adrian, you don't even know, but your energy is different.
That's right.
Because.
Yeah, Jordan will pick up on that.
Yeah,
we
all do.
Yeah.
So I just think that, you know, I'm not claiming that the power hour is the answer to all, but for most people, that's what's, when I coach people, 9 out of 10 times, they're not doing that.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. That's powerful. So circling back to close the loop on this all, what is the big picture vision for you? What is it that you want to accomplish? What is it you're going after?
Well, I'd like to find a beautiful girl that would like to spend time with me at some point in my life. That would be fun.
A wife or girlfriend?
I don't think, you know, just how about baby steps?
There we go.
Dating, start with dating, okay. You know, go from there.
Yep.
No, I'm half joking on that. So I actually have it really clear. The goal and plan is to build Be Great to its potential.
Beautiful.
Because I believe that Be Great is one of the bigger solutions that the world needs.
Mm-hmm.
Because if people are flipping through streaming or YouTube videos or whatever, if they're saturated with options of true stories, inspiration, empowerment, you know, quality content that they can go, wow, I just watched this as a movie or a video or a TV show, and I learned so much, and it inspired me to do a power hour or whatever, right?
That's right.
If they had those examples, like down to earth, it will impact communities.
That's right.
If we can raise more money for charities and just put gasoline on the fire, they're already doing the work, right?
Yep.
If we can create more awareness of the positive solutions around the world, the ripple effect is unsurmountable. Like, it's just, you can't predict the outcome of it. So that's that. For me personally, I want to travel.
Mm.
I want to be able to travel. Mm. I want to expand Be Great internationally, not just the TV series, but the events and everything.
Yeah.
I'm working on a technology company in the augmented reality space called Phideo, Phideo.
Nice.
So photo.
Yeah.
Merged with video.
Wow.
And this is going to be a game changer.
That's neat.
And I've been quietly
working
on this for a long time.
That's so cool.
And we're about to make a major breakthrough this year.
How cool.
And it's going to catch the attention of some of the biggest tech companies in the world.
That's exciting.
So that is exciting. I will continue to do consulting work, and I will continue to volunteer with Call to Rescue. But those are the priorities. Great. What's most important to me at this chapter in my life, I used to set goals of how long will it take to raise this much money or to get be great to these numbers.
Yeah. And
I stopped that last year. Now my goal setting and planning is different.
Mm-hmm.
It's a subtle but big difference. The outcome is going to be the outcome.
That's right.
We will raise money when we raise money. Mm-hmm. There's no way to put a timeline on it.
That's right.
And Be Great will hit its potential when it hits critical mass. Mm-hmm. I cannot predict that. I can work hard and manifest and all of that, but it will happen when it happens.
Mm.
What I can control is the quality of my life.
Mm-hmm.
So if someone or something toxic enters my life, I will cut it out very quickly.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what the income is. It doesn't matter how cool or fun it is.
Or how good looking it is.
Or how good looking it is, or, you know, whatever positive that, the positives can't just outweigh the negatives, right?
Yeah.
And that's the one thing I wish I could change in my life earlier, because I allowed a lot of stress and hardship
mm-hmm.
by foregoing this.
Mm.
So I have zero tolerance on
it.
Great. And last year that happened with a couple of businesses, and I'm really proud of myself that I quickly addressed it and nipped it in the bud, and it was still hard and toxic and these things.
Yep.
But the silver lining happened faster.
That's right.
And so things that make me happy are traveling, being around like-minded and like-hearted people, you know, doing the volunteer work, having fun, you know, tapping into my teenage spirit.
That's right.
That inner child.
Jumping on the drums at a Secret Knock event.
Exactly. That's why I do those things, putting together groups and activities. There's nothing wrong with selfishly finding ways to self-care mm-hmm. and bring happiness into your life.
That's right.
As long as it doesn't abuse or hurt others or neglect your priorities.
Well, you said something that I feel like was impactful for me, because it reminded me of something, and I want to make sure that it doesn't get missed in this conversation, is you found the silver linings quicker, right? You didn't let it draw out. You didn't let your boundaries be crossed for an extended period of time. You didn't let it overtake you and overcome and drain you and deplete you and put, you know, make you financially, like, you nipped it in the butt and you handled it quickly, even though it's painful and it still sucks, right? You embraced the suck faster and you got through it quicker.
Yeah.
Right? And the silver linings that are coming from that, I'm sure, are gonna be better. And I think a lot of people will put themselves through this longer, and they'll suffer for a longer period. It's like the self-deprecating, self-sabotaging behaviors that we do to ourselves, and now it's just like, you know what, I gotta cut it off and I gotta move on, I gotta keep going.
Right.
And it's not that you don't acknowledge that it sucks or you don't acknowledge the pain, you're not just burying it, but mm-hmm. you're looking at it and going, this really sucks, I see where I made the mistake here and where I could have done something differently. Mm-hmm. It's not like, this, and they had done that and I gotta get payback and I gotta fight, right? All of that kind of stuff that most people do. It's like, okay, how would I take responsibility for this? Okay, I see what I did, all right, moving on now. Right.
Yeah.
And then being able to move on. So, and then you said you got through it quicker. So a lot of people that are going through challenges, struggles, pains, toxic situations, just end it, be done with it, so you can move on and get to the next part of your life, because this isn't serving you in any way if you're having a situation like that.
Yeah, and I think what's important for that is there's two things out of what you just said. Number one, life is a pendulum, right? So when we have a bad habit, so in my case, In the past, I had a knack of attracting narcissistic or abusive people into my life. So the pendulum was over here to the left, right? And it was a repetitive pattern
mm-hmm.
over 20 years as an adult.
Mm.
I take responsibility. I attracted these people.
That's
I trusted them. I chose to go into business with them. I'm not the victim,
right?
I did not learn and set boundaries and say, hey, these are the guidelines, and once this is crossed, this is a deal breaker.
That's right.
I didn't put a lot of things in contracts because I trust you.
Handshake.
Mm-hmm. Okay, you said I take your word now.
Yep.
So shame on me. So the faster we learn from things
mm-hmm.
is when you improve.
That's right.
Einstein said if you do the same thing expecting different results, it's the definition of insanity.
Literally.
So I was doing the same thing over and over and over, and maybe at a slug pace, moving towards. The other thing that people do, and I have done, that's wrong, is you take the pendulum from the left all the way to the right. So it's like, I used to drink way too much, and I gambled, and I smoked, and all that, and then one day someone says, hey, those are toxic habits, you know, it's holding you back in life. Okay, I'm going to quit drinking, smoking, gambling, all on one day, and they go all the way over here.
Overcorrect.
And they overcorrect, and then everything falls to crap because they're so out of sorts.
That's right.
That now they have a whole new list of issues.
That's right.
Right? They're irritable, so they're snapping at their loved ones because they quit drinking, smoking, you know, all the things that brought them happiness over here. The key is to live in the sweet spot. So the decision that I made last year was, okay, I am going to stop this pattern, but instead of taking the pendulum all the way over, how do I do that? So what I did was I consulted with qualified advisors to say, what's my blind spot? What am I doing wrong? And how do I correct this?
That's right.
The key is qualified. That's the key word
there. The key. Qualified.
I didn't go to my grandmother. I didn't go to my neighbor. I didn't go to my best friend.
That's right.
I went to qualified people. In this case, actually, my best friend is a qualified mentor. But and then they helped me make a plan of, you don't just end it. You first put it in writing.
That's right.
And set the boundaries. Vocalize what those boundaries are and have consequences that if
they're not met,
if the toxicity is there, the partnership ends or the dating relationship ends or whatever, right? And I followed that, and I even gave my partners time to correct.
Yeah, that's huge.
Right? Give, you know,
give them grace.
Understanding, you know, we all make mistakes. I made mistakes in the process too.
Yep.
It wasn't just them. But the end result is it wasn't a match.
That's right.
And I see people that are in unhealthy marriages or relationships.
Yep.
And, you know, there's the covenant way and then there's the contract way. The covenant way is you do whatever it takes to fix it and make it work.
That's right.
The contract way is one or the other.
That's right.
So for me, that worked.
That's
and
neat.
I'm enjoying that peace and that. Because I say that because normally I would set all these goals, and then this year we're going to do, and I got goals and we're working on things.
Yeah.
But what's most important to me is to feel good mentally, physically, to have financial stability, and to be fulfilled.
That's right.
So next year it might be different, and I'm okay with that.
That's exactly right. That's beautiful. Beautiful wisdom, a lot of experience. There's so much to unpack in this conversation. Every episode of The Love Gangster is so different, so unique. Not just because of people's stories, but just because of the way the conversations flow. Our conversation, I want to make sure that we follow one thing consistently and that we give them a good challenge, and I know that you're going to bring it. What is the challenge for people that are listening to this that they know need to go out and do some form of random act of kindness, loving on people, and being a love gangster? What does that look like?
Yeah, so I would challenge people to make it intentional. Like, ingrain it in your routine. So you have to take time to think about what it is that you want to do and make it part of your power hour, make it part of your today list, so you know that X amount of times a day, week, month, or year that you are going to do this random act of kindness. So the one that I would challenge people to do is something that everyone can do. No matter your race, your religion, your economic status, your culture, your location, your industry, your skill set. And that is to, the key thing here is genuinely. But to genuinely compliment a stranger every day. It could be someone that you see in an elevator. It could be the person that takes your order at a restaurant. It can be a customer service person that you don't even physically see. They're on the phone. It can be, you know, someone that you know. It could be a stranger or whatever. But genuinely compliment someone and dig a little deeper. Not just, that's a nice hat. And there's nothing wrong with complimenting clothes.
You just said, that's a nice hat. Because that's exactly how Jordan and I met.
Oh, really?
He complimented my hat. He's like, hey, that's a nice hat. And I'm a hat guy. Like, that's, if you're going to give me one compliment, you compliment my hat, I'm in. Like,
that's so funny.
And he complimented my hat, and you just said that.
And there's nothing wrong with that. I'm saying I'm challenging you to dig a little bit deeper. And what I like to do is I like to compliment people in areas that they don't expect. Mm-hmm. So if someone always dresses sharp,
yeah.
Like, you know, one of my best buds, Fred Strawn, he mm-hmm. always dresses to kill. Like, yeah. Just, so he gets those compliments all the time.
Yeah.
But I like really thinking about and then telling someone, you know what? What I recognized about you in this 30-second interaction mm-hmm. was when you took my order, you intently listened, you made sure you included a smile, mm-hmm. you repeated it back to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these are great qualities that are going to bring value to your life in mm-hmm. the future. You know,
it's going to create a ripple effect too. It really is.
Because psychologically, when you compliment someone, it creates endorphins.
That's right.
And someone that is having a bad day, it can literally change their mood mm-hmm. 10 to 50 to 100%.
Wow.
From one compliment. That's why being sincere mm-hmm. and digging a little deeper on the context.
That's right.
Because people know, like, hey, dude, I like your jacket.
Yeah.
That's a compliment. Yeah. It could be genuine.
Yeah.
But when you know, dig a little bit deeper.
Yep, for sure. Well, that's
powerful. That's my challenge.
So that's your challenge for you guys. I want to hear back from you guys in the comments of this video, of this podcast. I want to hear what you guys have to think or hear what you guys do and what actually happens. Positive stories, so we can go out and share these with you. We're going to feature one of these stories. It's one of the things we're going to start doing. And I want to hear back from you. Or you'll be swimming with the fishes, capiche? All right, you guys, thank you so much, Brian, for being on here with me. Man, we're going to go eat some food and have a good rest of our evening together. And I look forward to seeing you guys on the next episode.
Can I say one more thing?
Absolutely.
Okay. For all of you that are watching, first of all, love you, Adrian. Thanks for this opportunity. What an incredible podcast. Of any topic, of all the topics that a person could choose to put time, money, and energy into creating awareness and digging into topics, you chose one that's one of the most important topics in the world, and it has such a good impact, and that speaks volumes about you. So whatever you do in life, no matter what your industry is, your economic status, your religious upbringing, your physical location, your age, no matter what you do in life, be great.
And as always, keep looking up. Fill the void. I am love. I am peace. I am joy that can never be destroyed. I am love. I am peace. I am joy.